Coming to you from cities all over the world, produced in Aotearoa, New Zealand, this is the Places for Good podcast. We bring you the designers, planners, and placemakers who shape the shared spaces of tomorrow, from stories of the past to visions for the future. We talk pride of place wherever you are. I'm your host, Boopsie Moran. Our guest today is the founding director of Living Space Project, a think and do placemaking social enterprise. She advises on strategy and project design for collaborative, inclusive placemaking and cities. She is the CEO of Foundation for Future London. She is co-founder of the UK Placemaking Collective and part of the global collective Placemaking X. Her latest book, The Placemaking Factor, focuses on the dynamics of grant making and philanthropic giving and how it can lead us to a fairer, greener future. Joining us from London, please welcome Maria Adebowale-Schwarte. Hello, Maria. How are you?
I'm fine, Boopsie. Thanks for inviting me to the podcast.
Great. Well, I thought we'd start with the work you do in Foundation for Future London. Is it a bit of co-creation or how does it work?
Yeah, I mean, the whole piece around the Foundation for Future London is based about collaborative working. And if people haven't heard of it, because I know you have listeners from around the globe, it is the Foundation for Future London is focusing on a specific area in East London. And it is part of a new cultural quarter. And we are there to democratize creativity, access into arts, culture, and placemaking. And our major focus is ensuring that we have open doors into space, and that there are a new generation of placemakers, that everything that happens within the cultural quarter is about connectivity, fairness, and co-created arts, culture, and urban design. And we run, we're both funder and fundraiser, and we have two major funders, Westfield Stratford City, and that's London, at Stratford, and also City Hall. And so what we do is run a number of very deep investment into local projects, run for and by local people. And the whole piece of what we do is very much focused, yes, around placemaking, yes, around diversity, but also around the issue of social value regeneration. So ensuring that people are part of the discussion around cities and places. Because I think as humans, it's what we do. We know what a good place looks like. We don't need to be an expert. We don't need necessarily a degree or a master's. And when we build well, when we have good places, then what we see there in the success is that it's been co-created, and it's been around what's the social value that places bring and who has been involved in that participatory approach. We cannot create good places, whether it's in East London, whether it's outside of East London, unless we make sure that everyone is at the table.
With East London, are there some infrastructure already in place, or are you taking empty buildings and empty spaces and redesigning that? Like, what are you starting with?
So we start with four incredible boroughs. I mean, there are actually more and boroughs, neighbourhoods. It depends on sort of where you live as to what you call it, but we call them boroughs. And the four boroughs that surround East Bank Cultural Quarter that the Foundation of Future London funds is actually Waltham Forest, Tower Hamlets, Hackney and Newham. And they are all neighbours to something called the Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park. And the Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park, it's kind of the thing that it left behind, its legacy, was the idea of having this new East London cultural quarter in and around the park. But having said that, as you probably just heard, actually what was already there were four amazing boroughs, amazing people, talent, creativity, all of those things already happening. And so what we want to make sure is that it doesn't feel, or correcting any feelings around where people, you know, something comes in and then people are done to. And for others, that's a no-go. So yes, there was always something there. And if you look at the history of East London, it's incredibly rich. It's one of the areas where, you know, you can plot Romans and people before Romans coming into East London, actually from around the world, Africa, Asia, Europe, and it's incredible. And that history and talent and ambition has followed through all those centuries. And so it's absolutely crucial that anything that happens there is about communities leading and being part of that decision making.
And so when you're focusing on what already exists, is it almost like you're detracting reproduction of other areas seeping into that unique space? Like, how do you go about that step? And then once you've successfully found the uniqueness that you're trying to uplift and bring out and fund, where's their platform to be shared? Where are their spaces?
I've been at the foundation for just about 3 years this year. And we've spent a lot of time with what we're calling a participatory approach, which most people know about. And it's basically that you don't do anything unless it's in participation. And so what we have done is made sure that we have gone out into local communities. We haven't just held a meeting and hoped someone turned up. We have asked people, we have gone through to faith groups, to the LGBTQ I plus community, we have gone to Black, Asian and white and working class communities, and of course, you know, everyone is connected to all of those connectivities as humans. And also we've listened and made sure that our grants are about and fund those things that people have said they need.
I feel really lucky to have caught you at the three-year mark, because I feel like that is almost a minimum in the birthing of a process and into a project, right? If you do it right, it takes a couple of years. So we must be at the point where you've got a knack for some of the things they've asked for and started delivering. Do you have any moments or items that you have done lately?
Yeah, so we are putting in £10 million over the next 4 years. And we have funded something called, part of a cultural exchange. And we're also working with young people. So we supported projects, both in regards to capital funding and in regards to health. Jobs and training. We've been working with Creative Schools, which is a massive big network across East London. So the four boroughs that I mentioned, but also others. You know, we think that this whole agenda around inclusivity and this phrase that we have in the UK at the moment about levelling up, you know, which is basically equity and making sure that the way in which we work with other humans is about equality and partnership. And we've made sure that actually young and older people are part of this conversation. So there are probably the best part of 100 projects that we are currently funding. And that will go from anything to an intergenerational project working on climate change with young people in schools and older people who have been in the whole sort of climate change environmental leadership agenda for many years, and it's about that cross-sector conversations and how we deal with that in the four boroughs in East London. And then we also have East Bank Partners. Now the East Bank Partners, there's a list, and I don't want to give all of them in case I forget them, but we have some major universities, UCL, University College of London, UAL, Sadler's Wells, you know, BBC London, and a whole load of others.
When you partner with the universities, do they help you with data collection, or are you partnering in what specific way with them?
So that's a good question. So there is a conversation. What we do, we work very closely with them around, yes, yeah, exactly, data collection, information, what's happening, how can we do better, We have a whole, we have an agreement about how things are measured, how well we're doing or not, how to improve it. So the foundation has its own separate one, but it's very much connected to East Bank and the partners. And the partners also have their own separate research and capability questions, where we're doing, what we're doing right and what we're doing not so right. And yeah, there are regular meetings around, you know, how we improve that. And for both of our partners and for the foundation, as I mentioned, we don't just say how well we're doing or how badly we're doing. It's measured within the communities that we work with, not just our institutions.
Yeah, so it's almost like they're partners in research, but they're also, you check each other, like an audit almost. So you,
that's right,
you're always growing.
Yeah, and you know, the partners are also part of a major part of the East Bank Cultural Quarter. And so we fund significantly, I think it's about 1.5, it will be more than that over time, a whole project around providing work skills, access to the gig economy, and we've funded projects in the cultural quarter which actually support young and older people get those kind of networks that some people already have, and support them getting into both placemaking but also creativity and the arts. And so yeah, it's we fund a lot, we gather a lot of information, we spot the signals, you know, we respond and we make sure we take up key challenges of co-ownership.
Yeah, it feels like a really holistic approach, actually, when you think of when you brought in all these subjects like health, job creation. It's not just looking at one area, it's a holistic look at place. And I think this is a good intro into the question of, if you yourself, Maria, were mayor of the City of London as a whole, what radical revisions might you have or immediate policy changes would you love to implement in London, or even your hometown, which isn't London, I've discovered. So, because there must be in your processes currently some barriers you see that if you could change policies to remove the barriers, they've come up for you. Do you have any ideas if you're Mayor Maria?
If I'm Mayor Maria, it's kind of like, how long have you got for that answer? But the project that we funded in East London and East Bank, one of the many, is called the Good Growth Hub. And that's about inclusive, socially aware improvement of city economies, really. And if I was mayor, I would make sure that everything that we do is put through a social value lens. And that is, when you do something, you look at why are we doing it, but you look at the kind of indicators such as SDG 11, and for the foundation, and also, you know, in my work when I've done work with the Living Space Project, it's always been around, how do you make sustainable places and communities that recognize human rights and also understand what it means to ensure that everyone has access in a space of rapid urbanization, which is what we're having across the globe, and it's happening so fast, that unless we have a human rights approach to that, then we are going to be in trouble. And if you look at sort of at the day-to-day level about homes and houses and spaces, there's one thing. You create a space that is inclusive at all times. I co-edited a book called Our City, and a big part of that was around, and that's part of the whole placemaking work and STEPO. And basically what we need to do is remember, we're not just dealing with bricks and buildings. And if you look at where we, you know, COVID-19 has really highlighted the fact that spaces and green spaces are not nice to have. They are must-haves. They are rights. Everyone has a right to a space, and that space should be a healthy space. You should always make sure there's access to co-design that. Now, I love architecture and I love public realm, But my concern, the thing I would do as a mayor would, who has been part of that agenda? Who has had a say, but not only just a say, but who has been resourced to be involved? So I think far too often, even with goodwill, a lot of institutions and politicians will say, yes, we've asked communities to be involved. But you're asking communities that might have 2, 3, or 4 jobs, that are struggling, that are living in homes that don't meet their needs, and they're meant to get involved in the same way that experts would have been paid. So I would resource that kind of intelligence and lived experience in placemaking, and I would make that as a centre of all the policies that I do. And I would definitely focus on issues around, as I said, SDG 11, inclusive cities, access to green spaces, and also fundamental, absolutely fundamental, is equality and diversity and inclusion. And I know some people saying, well, it's just a buzzword. It absolutely isn't, and it never has been for me, for the Foundation Future London, the Living Space Project, or anything that I work on. If I don't work with or want to work with any organisation that doesn't fundamentally believe in those issues as boundaries to what they do and how they scope and make sense of their work. They can make a profit, but that profit has to be good, and they have to do things in the right way.
And they have to actively show it. It's like when you say the doing, you can say the word inclusion and diversity in your values, but you have to do it. And I think that's very clear in your messages if you're a mayor. So an interesting thing we've started trying to do is paying people when they come to feedback sessions. So if they come for an hour to talk about transport or access to certain things in their area, they get a $50 voucher. Is that an idea that has worked for you in the past?
It does work. And I think, you know, the interesting thing is that some people might have been able to come to the table anyway, but that doesn't matter. And what it shows is respect. And grantees and potential grantees say that to us. And so, you know, my colleagues, my team, I've got a great team at the Foundation Future London and colleagues at Living Space Project, but focusing on the Foundation Future London, you know, the first thing my colleagues do and the team do is ask people. You know, they make sure it's at the right time. They might do 2 of the same meetings so that it meets different people's needs. We do resource, yes, we've got a big thing about that. You know, if someone in the old days when we used to meet up as humans in a room, you know, we make sure that we would pay for transport. We're very uncomfortable. And in fact, if we have a partner that says, you know, there's no funding for communities, then we ask them to rethink that. So we always make sure there are resources for people to be involved in the conversation. And one of the things you asked if I was mayor is that I would also open up this whole sort of professionalisation of architecture and planning. And it's not that I wouldn't say, you know, no degrees, that would be silly. But what I would say is, let's have some alternative ways of getting involved in that sector. And here in the UK, it's incredibly difficult. It's like 5 or 7 years. Now, if you don't have those resources, then that's really problematic. But what's even more problematic is that we are having, it can lead to architecture and planning, not having the kind of lived experience, that knowledge, that expertise, academic and otherwise, been involved in future. And that is something we can't afford to do. Now, that is slowly changing. I think there are some architects, some planners that are, you know, putting together scholarships. There's the Royal Institute of British Architecture, I think we're really working hard at that. We have black female architects. We have LGBTQI architects coming together and saying, you have to hear us, and you haven't done before, so we're going to put our own organisations together, our own conversations. And I think that is meaning that certainly around London, and I'm hoping the UK, and hopefully around the world, that is meaning that we have a better agenda around placemaking, real solutions and a real understanding around what we mean by ensuring that we have an equitable space, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting when you do the feedback sessions, right? You see that sometimes we'll learn about flooding that we didn't know existed. The planners and the architects didn't know that in winter for 3 weeks, that area floods. So yeah, they can add that to their design. Or shade, stuff like this is something that you can only know if you live there.
Exactly. So flooding, I mean, London, it has been, and many other places in the UK, unfortunately in England, have had still built in floodplains. And actually, we are having to deal now with the idea of, in the UK, in England, can we really, A, we shouldn't really be building anymore. How do we support local authorities to say no to buildings in floodplain areas? How do we acclimatise and support the idea that actually some of these places might not be around in a couple of years because we built in the wrong places? How do we make sure that those people living in those spaces and places and cities and communities have housing? How do we kind of just tackle some of those really big, difficult conversations? And how do we make sure that when we do build, we build differently? And there are conversations at the Environment Agency and other institutions whereby, you know, if you're talking to architects, actually, and we're talking about flooding, and there's going to be a lot of it here, and there is, hills, then, you know, why are we building houses still with the first floor with you know, major rooms in it? Why are we not building houses where actually the first floor is the area that protects the house, and the next two floors are where people live? So that kind of rethinking about how we do things.
The person always bringing it up is always not the architect, not the planner. It's the person that lives there 30 years and goes, hey, did you know that for the last 10, this has happened? And imagine if they didn't say that, or for our instances, if we're doing tactile urbanism, that is an easy fix. We can adapt and trial a solution for the person if it's just the street and not hard infrastructure like a building. Imagine if you didn't hear that voice or go out there to find them.
Yeah, exactly. And the whole thing about porous surfaces, and there's a really great organization that focuses on porous surfaces based in the US. And I think they've just said it so clearly about actually just concrete is killing us. And, you know, why don't we, as a supposedly evolved species, why are we still building concrete on using surfaces that doesn't allow for porosity? That means there is lots of heat. It's problematic for people to live in their homes or in areas. And actually, one of the things that they've done is they've done really useful research that shows where there isn't, that you're most likely to work in a non-porous surface area if you're in a low-income household, and if you have brown skin, or if you're working class. So, you know, we have to unpack this whole inequality around how we do things as placemakers. And I think we also have to be brave, because I think sometimes when we talk about placemaking, there are others that aren't necessarily placemakers that think it's something soft and gooey, and it's just about a couple of flowers and a hedge, you know, near some local neighbourhood. This is actually quite deeply political. I'm not talking about particle politics, but placemaking is absolutely a crucial agenda, and it is political because we will make choices about where we put our money and who we resource. And it's also political because it means we have to do things differently. We have to respect humans, we have to respect the planet, and we have to do things better than we have ever done before.
Yeah, and I agree in the sense that there's words that are participatory, equity, and inclusion. So let's say lighting, first off, or benches and shade. Those are three that you know when you're in an equitable city, when all of a sudden there's a bench here and no benches there. And so when you talk about a participatory budget, let's say for your region, East London, you'd want to say, okay, we're going to budget for the whole area to get 20 lights, not just 20 lights over here. And I think when you plan like that or design like that, in your job, are there any heroes in those local communities that are really helpful and pivotal in making that place more equitable?
So many. I mean, we wouldn't be able to do our jobs without that. We wouldn't be able to be good funders, and I hope that's what we are. We certainly thrive about always. But, you know, it's by the listening and absolutely about listening and hearing, and not just hearing, but listening. And so we fund a lot of public realm work, both in the park, but the four boroughs, and with City Hall And we've also City of London, because we have two sort of parts of London, the city part and also the surrounding area. And we work with both institutions to make sure that what we're trying to do with our East Bank partners, but also with the local communities, is ensure connectivity between areas. Because also whilst we talk about place, and this is the politics of it, not everyone feels comfortable even leaving their street, let alone their neighbourhood. So we think that arts and culture and also access to jobs allows people to move between these different areas, connect as humans, connect the spaces. And what we're finding is that art and public realm and sculpture and walks help that. So wayfaring is really crucial to our work, and we fund a lot of that in its millions. And also, you know, supporting people in having that comfort around moving from their street to another street. And for some people listening to this podcast, it might seem a bit strange, but actually it breaks my heart that many young people in some of the boroughs feel they can't leave their neighbourhood. A, they don't feel welcomed in another one. B, they've never been to the next neighbourhood before. So, you know, sometimes people are scared of what they've not seen. But sometimes, actually, there's a reason for being scared about going into another neighbourhood. And especially for a lot of young boys and young women. You know, there is a lot of crime by young people against young people, but there is more goodness and hope for each other and supporting each other than there is that. But we have to recognise that we need to design out crime, design out anything that actually means another human harming another human just because they live in a different neighbourhood.
And are there people in City Hall that are behind those closed doors that are really active in the listening and really proactive in the doing specifically that have really?
I think there is. I really think there is. I think both mayors, but also their teams, I think in City of London and City Hall, I think there is a real commitment to being better placemakers and understanding the value, understanding the importance of social value as a central piece. I mean, I've been working with colleagues in a committee called the London Sustainable Development Commission, which helps provide advice, independent advice to the City Hall. And, you know, we have been talking about the importance of this. And so if anyone is listening, if they want to go to the London Sustainable Development Commission, UK, and look up the social value regeneration report, you'll see a lot more of what I'm seeing in regards to, you know, the mayor and the whole sort of agenda around construction and regeneration, what it should look like. It's not about throwing up more houses on its own. It comes with a whole lot more than that.
And then speaking to that, when you say what it looks like, I'm curious what tastes or sounds or smells for home are for you. And it could be just in London or it could be from where you grew up. And I think when you're helping people find a place, you kind of have a strong sense of that when you're a placemaker. So do you have any particular sounds or smells? Or?
So I'm from Yorkshire. So if people don't know that, it's a northern part of England. It doesn't mean much, but it's a mining town, or a mining city, actually. It was a mining city until the mines got closed down. And it is quite an amazing space. And as you might know from my family name, my parents are Nigerian and my husband is German. And so I have kind of an interesting background. But smells and sounds, if I'm thinking of Wakefield, my hometown, it actually is fish and chips, because we used to actually live near a fish and chip shop. So I remember going into that fish and chip shop a couple of streets away from us, and that smell still reminds me of Wakefield. I was very lucky enough to live 5 minutes from a park, which is absolutely stunning. So the smell of fresh air, which is, yeah. It sounds strange, but you can smell fresh air when you go into a park. That initial feeling when you just breathe and it just feels beautiful because you're outside. And in London, I think I love an area called Lewisham, for people that know that, and it is the new cultural area in London. So every year there is one borough becomes sort of cultural centre, and Lewisham is it. It has some amazing cultural activities and ideas, and I think the sound is probably walking in to what is Catford Market, which is southeast London, and just hearing people talking as they're going to the various stalls, etc. And there is something called Catford News, and that is a local cinema and a workplace, and walking to them, smelling the coffee is also very nice.
Yeah, and I think just by sharing those, it's quickly makes you have a sense of what is belonging, what smells you think everyone should have the right to have.
Absolutely. And at home, I guess my mum is a wonderful cook, and she used to cook something called chicken obe, which is a really nice chicken stew. So that's a really nice smell for me as well.
That's amazing. I want to eat and have all those things now. And in your community, speaking of all these wonderful smells and sounds, are there people in East London that you work with that use those food or markets to actually liven up the cultural hub?
Absolutely. So they liven up the cultural hub not only by running their own sort of projects where it welcomes in people, and we fund a lot of that, millions again. There is, yes, and it's around either bringing people into a space, whether that's bricks and mortar, outdoors, lots of walks. But we also use food and art as a conversation for well-being. And or with young people who are in care or looked after, we use it for, as I said before, intergenerational conversations, cross place or cross borough conversations. So yes, we do. And what we found is that it's been really important for people to work together and, you know, make sense of a place, and to kind of see in which they can create capacity and share understanding, really. I think everything we do and all the projects that come from local communities, it's a catalyst. It's a place for social justice, levelling up, and good growth. And a lot of our projects use food as that conversation. And you find that in other charities where they use, for example, the making of bread to have a conversation around what it's like to be a refugee in London, and then what it's like to maybe use that story as part of an art or a piece of, you know, art or sculpture, or how that then gets designed into a space.
That's amazing to bridge the community output with food and all these senses. And so while we talk about this and we begin to close, I'm wondering where people can learn more about your work. Are there any links?
So you can find out about the Foundation for Future London, which is www.foundation.london. And you can find Living Space Project as Living Space Project on the website. But you can find all about East Bank and all about the work that we do at the Foundation, the projects, the funding, and we are always, always looking for people to support us and help us with funding or collaborative projects.
That's fair. You,
yeah, someone once said that fundraising will not create a revolution, and they're probably right, but you know, resources will. So cheeky ask for the Foundation, anyone that's interested in supporting us, but also working with us, because we are looking at international and city work across cities. And so we're working with London and other cities in the UK or outside of it.
Well, fantastic. Well, having you here today has been really great. And thank you so much for sharing the importance of your participatory practice and design. And do you have any last closing words?
No, I would just say that place, it should be place-led, not place-based. Place is political, and lead, ask difficult questions, share your learning and share your data. And funding is important, and it needs funding for longer. It needs to be core and it needs to be fair.
Well, that was perfect and amazing. I really appreciate you giving us your time today. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please share with a friend. And let's continue to grow and seed new ways of designing together with people for people in our own cities and in places across the globe. Thank you for listening.